Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you guys are doing fantastic today. We have with us Ruben Izgalov. And Ruben is doing debt, guys, is doing debt. And we'll have a first hand about debt, about what's going on in debt. Not only that, because we're a commercial real estate show, but every once in a while, we need to understand what's happening countrywide to residential. Residential is something's happening there. We have to understand that. Ruben here is going to tell us all about himself, all about the market. Ruben, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And you know what? Before I just go on and tell about you, we lend nationwide private lending. Please tell us, give us just a 2-minute elevator pitch of what you guys do.
Happy to. So we are a private lender lending, obviously nationwide, specifically focused on the 1-to-4-unit residential bridge side of the debt. We also have a perm product for many of our investors who today, rather than flipping a property, they choose to hold on to the property and leave it for rental income and build out their portfolio that way. So we obviously had to implement that new program where we're offering 30-year products for their current bridge product. In addition to that, we also finance many ground-up projects, a lot of which is happening today because of the lack of inventory. So we also have a program for those projects.
Sounds awesome. And we're going to talk all about that. We're going to get into that. You know what? But before we get into all that, let's get into the fun story. How did you get into real estate? How it all started? Tell us a little bit.
How far do you want me to go back?
As far as the juicier, the better.
There we go. I like the sound of that. So, I mean, we immigrated from the former Soviet Union back in 1994. And my parents came to America with very little money. I think my father, he's very proud of saying this, he had a little under $1,500 in his pocket. He had 4 kids. And of course, my mother that he had to take care of. So it was really the kind of like school of hard knocks experience. You know, I went straight into first grade. I was 6 years old at the time. But ultimately, I had to work. I had to work at the age of 8. I was already working, giving out flyers in New York City. So it taught me a lot. It taught me what hard work and money really means and how hard it is to earn it. Kind of fast forward a few years later, my brothers and I, we actually started buying real estate. Originally, we actually started wholesaling. So we would find projects, we would enter into contract, and then find investors to buy the project because we just didn't have the necessary funds to be able to do it ourselves. And then ultimately we were able to build some capital to start buying projects ourselves, fixing them, flipping them, develop them, and so on. Fast forward a little further, I decided to go back to school, went to get my JD at Turo School of Law here in Long Island, New York, and eventually thought I was gonna be the best attorney in the world. Right after graduating law school, I decided that I want to go find a cheaper source of capital for our own projects, because at the time that we were buying and flipping and developing, we were paying an arm and a leg to our hard money lenders. So we decided to go to an event in Arizona where we've met a number of interesting people who
I'm stopping you. Yeah. It's very interesting what you're saying, because I want to go back for a little bit, because this is, a lot of people are asking always the question of, the beginnings are the hardest, right?
Yeah.
Beginnings are the hardest. Your father started with what type of stuff? What type of deals? The types?
So My father did not go into real estate. He actually went into becoming, he was a cab driver. And then eventually he fell very ill. You know, he's still till this day, thank God, is staying strong. He's with us.
Thank God.
He's going through a lot of complications, but he didn't have the luxuries that he did back home, where he was, you know, a very big businessman. He had a lot going on, but coming to an America with four kids, he didn't have the luxury of trying to make deals happen, figuring out the system. He had to go straight to work.
Wow.
And the way in which he did that is driving a cab for many years. But eventually my brothers and I, my older brothers specifically.
That's exactly the question. How do you guys pick it up? Meaning we all thank our parents for making a move and moving to a country that has abundance and all that stuff. Really, thank God. But what got you the move? You know, without too much capital, without too much going on, how you and your brothers, how'd you do it? Meaning, how'd you gather up the pennies and what type of deals you went for in the very beginning?
Specifically, we did it very clever, in my opinion. I think, you know, a lot of investors today, they want to go in and they want to go in running. They don't want to crawl before they walk. They want to start running right away. But what we did instead is we understood that there's a lot of pitfalls in the real estate market. And there are, but we wanted to learn them before we actually put our money into play. So what we started doing is we started wholesaling properties. But aside from wanting to learn, we also didn't really have the liquidity. What we did have is we had liquidity to put down on contracts. We had liquidity to be able to find properties and then connect them to investors that had liquidity to actually buy the properties. So by doing several of those type of wholesaling projects, I think it was about 10 to 15, we had built enough liquidity to go out and buy our first.
What type
project
of deals? Single family homes or duplexes?
There were one to four units. There were one to four units. A few mixed properties out in Brooklyn. And then we eventually were able to buy our first three unit project in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We had a home run with the project. It needed a lot of work. It was a three unit, three story property. We bought it for about $240,000 at the time. I think we dumped another $500,000 into the renovation. And then we ultimately sold it for about 1.5, 1.6. So we had a home run on that deal. And that was our first taste of real estate, fixing and flipping, you know, and then eventually it was just from there on, it was just nothing but growth.
Beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
So the next step was you started saying going to Phoenix, I think it was.
So we went to an event in Phoenix to try to find a cheaper source of capital for ourselves. It was a private lending event. There was a bunch of private lenders, syndicators, a lot of institutions that were buying these loans that we're ultimately making today. And we were approached by several attorneys out there who said, look, you know, I'm sure you're doing good at what you do, but there's this option of starting a fund, raising capital and lending, and then ultimately trading this paper and so on. So we went in there as private investors, fix and flippers, developers, and we walked out as hard money lenders. A month after that, we made our first loan.
It opened your eyes, kind of? I mean, all of a sudden it was an eye-opener. Oh my gosh, I can make money without doing all this stuff. I just have to find capital, be a hard money lender. Boom, 12%, 13%, 14%, and that's it.
Look, I wish we can get 13%, 14%. That's what I used to pay. I used to pay about 14 or 15% when I was borrowing money many years back.
Yeah.
But today it's a little different. But
yeah, no, today's different.
To answer your question, we went there to find a cheaper source of capital, mainly because our margins began compressing, right? There were a lot of new entries into the business where people were buying properties, and they really didn't understand what they were doing. So as a result, you know, when we were bidding on a property that, you know, it was only me and maybe another two or three investors, later down the road, it was me and another 15 or 20 investors. So what ended up happening is our profit margin started compressing. So what we had to do is try to figure out ways of how do we find a cheaper source of capital? What can we do to actually beef up our profit margins? So what we did is we went to this event to start looking for a cheaper source of capital. And then eventually it was approached with this idea and we're like, boom, here's the idea. Let's run with this. Maybe this will help us kind of segue out of fixing and flipping, you know, but eventually not only did we do amazing with this, but we're also noticing that our borrowers, our investors today, they're becoming very creative. You know, they're house hacking, they're improving the property in a number of ways by doing horizontal and vertical extensions, converting the properties and so on. So there's a lot of different ways to make money in real estate other than what we were doing, was just renovating and flipping.
Interesting. I would love to speak about that, you know, about that and learn more. So we land, fast forward, how do you start the company? Meaning you guys.
It's a very good question. So ultimately what ended up happening is we come back, my brother Moses and I, we came back to New York and we're like, all right, we have this great idea. You know, we have some liquidity. Let's go out and start lending money. So the first thing that we did is we went straight to our phone book and we started calling all of our friends who were also our competitors, who were bidding against the same properties that we were bidding. And we're like, look, you know, we're no longer in the fix and flip space. We're not buying anymore. We're not interested in doing that. We're in the lending space. Why don't we lend you money on your next project? And we knew what type of projects they were buying. We knew all the players in the industry. We had good relationships with them. So they entrusted us. In 2018, in I think May of 2018, we made our first loan. And we did about, I want to say, $26 million in the whole year of 2018. So it was a modest growth. But in 2019, we multiplied by about 4 or 5 times. We did about $125 million in 2019. And I got to say, the reason to that is because people knew that they can trust us. People knew that we were, you know, essentially getting people to the closing table. We can execute. But also customer service. I mean, borrowers were calling me at 10, 11 o'clock at night saying, hey, you know what? My short sale approval is expiring, or I have a time of the essence on this deal and I got to close tomorrow or after tomorrow. They knew that they can trust us to know that they can close, that we can close in time. And I think that was what helped us grow to the number and to the magnitude that we grew today.
Are you guys also involved in raising the capital yourself, or you just?
We are. We are. So we are currently raising capital. We're actually in capital raise mode. So it's a never ending process.
Never ending. Yes.
Know, as For you're sure. growing, you need more capital, you know, so it's a never ending process. You're always raising capital.
So tell me something, if you could talk a little bit about your experience with investors and how you created that and, you know, the trust and the growth, how you guys did it and still doing.
Yeah, full transparency. I think that's key, right? That's exactly what borrowers, investors want to see today. They want to know that, you know what you're doing. You've been around the block. You have the experience in executing the projects. But they also want to know that, in essence, you have a plan of taking over a project in the event that you need to and being able to complete it yourself. So our experience was in the fix and flip space, specifically in the 1-4 unit residential. So when we were raising capital from friends and family, we had the ability to show them that we have the ability to execute ourselves in the event that we need to. But we were also very familiar with the market that we were lending in, specifically in New York City and New Jersey market. Ultimately, we grew outside of New York and New Jersey. Today, we're lending nationwide. Most of our business is still in the two core states of New York and New Jersey. But to answer your question, I think it's full transparency and being able to show them that you can execute on a deal in the event that you have to do it yourself.
That's incredible. Tell me something. You guys decided, because a lot of people are saying, okay, I'm in the 1-4, right? I'm in the 1-4 units. And that is in definition residential, right? That's the definition of residential.
Correct.
And I obviously speak mostly to people who do commercial, multifamily of certain sizes, et cetera. And the people who do, if it's retail or office or mixed use or whatever it is, hotels, even anything. You guys decided to stay in this field and you made yourself, like, you brought yourself to a certain expertise in this field.
Yeah.
What made that decision happen in practice to stay there and say, I'm going to be 100% there and that's it, at least for now. Obviously, we don't know the future, but I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, we've done a number of multifamily deals for our experienced borrowers, borrowers that are returning, that have showed us, you know, they've paid off loans with us, showed us a good track record. So we've done a number of those, I would say a handful. But the reason why I think that we stayed on the track of residential 1-4 units, because that's where our experience lay. Right. When we're going out there and, you know, raising capital from friends and family, I want to make sure that I can sleep at night. I want to make sure that I can look them in the eye tomorrow and tell them that there was no loss of principle. So essentially, to answer your question, I think it's because of our experience was specifically in the fact that we knew the residential side, and I think we wanted to stick with where our experience laid.
Tell me something. Today's environment is a very interesting environment, especially for those type of deals. But before we get into deal structures and the way they are structured today, if you could tell us, the people who come to borrow money from you, are mostly people who want to live in a home or invest in a single family?
So they're speculators.
Can you talk about this a little bit? You know, what's going on today in the market in terms of those investors? Why are they coming? What's the interest? What's the difference pre-COVID to post-COVID with those investors who come for the 1-4?
It's a good question. So first and foremost, we as private lenders, we don't lend on owner-occupied properties because then they become qualified mortgages. Essentially, we lend to investors on their bridge, short-term bridge products. So these are investors who are buying properties, fixing them up and flipping them. They're not living the project. Now that's the first point of your question. Second part is, what are we seeing today, right? What's happening in the market? I got to tell you, in 2019, 2020, the average loan size in New Jersey for us was right around $200,000 to $350,000. I got to tell you, the average loan size in New Jersey today is greater than $400,000. And the reason why is because prices have just skyrocketed. I contribute that to a number of factors. One, obviously it's supply and demand, right? People want to get out of their apartments, especially in New York City. They can't be living in a cramped 1-2-bedroom apartment with kids and having to work from that apartment. It's not easy, right? So essentially people are moving out. They're going into the suburbs. For example, the neighborhood that I live in, I mean, houses are not on the market for more than 2 or 3 days. I see a sign go up. I call the realtor, the next day or the following day. And he's like, look, I already have like literally 8 valid good offers that are on the table. And we're literally considering all of them because at this point, they're all in cash. They're all ready to close. So it's really a supply demand issue. There's just not enough housing and there's way too much demand. The other contributing factor to that, in my opinion, is the rates, right? The feds have reduced the rates to a point of, I think it hasn't been seen in many, many years. So true. As a result, there's a lot more purchasing and buying power than there was before. Someone with a W-2 income who wouldn't qualify for a loan greater than $500,000, now that the rates are as low as they are today, they are qualifying for a loan for greater than, $600,000 or $700,000. So essentially, it's the rates that also contributed to that factor.
It's amazing. Tell me something. The environment today of rates, past month, where is it today in your field?
So in my field, it lands anywhere between 8.75 to about 11%. That's currently where it's landing, depending on the borrower's experience and the leverage. As far as what we're seeing on the conventional side, I think they're still in the high twos to low threes. So it's unbelievable.
So tell me something, who is coming to you? You guys, hard money lenders, right?
Yeah.
You give, most of the people who are listening to me, they do understand what hard money lending is.
Right.
But if you could make it vivid for the residential aspect of things.
Yeah.
Meaning we understand these are investors, these are flippers for the most part. Why are they coming to you? What is on their agenda when they come to you versus going to the bank? What's going on there? Meaning, what are they going through? A number of things. Go ahead.
Yeah, a number of things. I mean, you could think to yourself, well, why would I go to WeLend when their rates are, 8.75 to what have you, versus going to Chase or Wells Fargo when their rates are in, the mid threes, low threes? The answer is very simple. There's a number of reasons to it. One, many of our investors today, they may not qualify for a mortgage with Chase, right? They don't have the tax returns. They don't have the bank statements. They don't have a W-2 income. So that's one contributing factor. Two, aside for the income and their bank statements and the liquidity, it could also be that their credit is not up to par, right? So one, we don't need tax returns. We don't need bank statements. And for us, 620 credit is excellent credit. Whereas Chase or Wells Fargo or other conventional lenders, they want to see a credit of at least 700 or greater, or 680 or greater. That's one another factor. Another factor is the fact that we lend very quickly. You know, most of our loans are funded within 5 to 7 business days, whereas going to a conventional lender, it could take 30, 40, maybe even 90 days to fund a loan. I mean, 30 days is really on a quick side, and that would be impressive to see.
That's right.
Normally, it's about 90 to 120 days. In addition to that, we lend on properties that are uninhabitable, right? They could be missing a roof. They could be, you know, squatters in the property. A conventional lender would never lend on those type of properties. In addition to that, we lend on auction type of properties, foreclosed type of properties, short sale type of properties. So it's a number of things where lenders, other conventional lenders would never lend on, or the borrowers, our investors, speculators today would never even qualify for with Chase or Wells Fargo or other lenders alike.
Yeah, you want to hear something interesting. When I have my courses about real estate, and I explain, one of the things I explain, it's all recorded, so, but the one of the things that I teach there is the difference of financing between residential and commercial. And you're not in that category. I'll explain why. Right. That's very interesting. Because when I explain the idea of commercial, the banks, hard money lenders, doesn't matter who's the lender, doesn't matter. Even the broker who's coming in between trying to get things done to originate those loans, doesn't matter. They all look at this whole thing as a business. Obviously, there are certain qualifications that the GP, the general partner, the sponsor needs to have when he comes into a deal. And he has to sign a loan. There are certain qualifications. We all know that. But the main emphasis is on the deal. What is the deal doing? It's a business. When a residential, it's mostly on the person. Do you have a great credit? Are you capable of making the payments? We're talking about payments of the mortgage and so on and so forth. That's how it looked like. But in your case, and that's what I want you to explain, in your case, you are also looking at it from everything you said, you're also looking at it as a business. You're saying, listen, I'm more comfortable. The fact that I don't need tax returns, I don't need you. I need to know that you are honest, that you have some credit, that you have something, but I'm looking at the deal and you.
Correct.
Can you explain that a little bit? What's happening with the person who's coming to you with that, you know, banged up home, you know, and he wants to buy it and to make out of it whatever plan he has? Yeah. What will make you not give him or her or give them the loan?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. So essentially what it comes down to is the fact that we're asset-based lenders, right? So when our underwriting occurs, it's, I would say, a good 80% of the underwriting revolves around the property, right? What is the current condition of the property, whether it's occupied or not? What's the scope of work that's needed to complete the project and bring it to the after repair value that our appraiser says it will be? What is the estimated rental income in the event that they choose to keep the property? Because what if the prices drop tomorrow? So we need to make sure that he has the ability to go out and refinance into a conventional or into a 30-year product, DSCR product. So 70, 80% of it revolves around the asset. The other portion of it does revolve around the borrower. So we want to make sure, like you said, that their credit worthiness, right? That they don't have any bankruptcies, they don't have any foreclosures or anything to that effect. And that's really about it on the borrower side. But essentially, we just want to make sure that in the event that the borrower is buying the property, they're fixing and they're flipping it, there's enough meat on the bone for the borrower to become profitable. Because if they're not, then truth be told, most of the loans that don't become profitable, they end up becoming, you know, loans that go bad on your balance sheet. And that's something that we want to avoid. But in the event that we have to take over a property, we want to make sure there's enough meat on the bone for us to be able to take over the project and recuperate not only, you know, the principal that we've put in, but also possibly the interest that did accrue.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. So the people who come to you mostly are flipping, right? Are fix and flip and stuff like that. So it's mostly what, you know, in commercial, we always say it's a construction loan, you would call it. It's a bridge loan.
Essentially, it's a bridge loan. Yeah. Exactly. 12-month loan. Exactly. So most balloon loans. So most balloon, of the loans are repaid. Yeah, most of the loans are usually repaid within, I would say, 8 to 9 months. So it's a bridge product, essentially.
Bridge product. Interesting.
Yeah.
And Do you also help people when they get to a point and they want to keep the home? Maybe they do a refi. So you help them with that too?
Absolutely. So
how would you do that?
So what we've been noticing is a lot of our investors, instead of wanting to flip the property, they want to hold on to the property, right? Rents have been climbing and inching upwards. So as a result, a lot of our investors, they've been changing their game plan. In addition to that, all this money that's being printed, we are all expecting inflation. So we all know the best way to hedge against inflation is other than buying Bitcoins and gold and what have you, is also buying real estate because the values are going to be appreciating. So a combination of one, the rental income is appreciating along with the values appreciating, a lot of our borrowers choose to keep the property. So what we've done is we've implemented a DSCR program. What that does is it offers a borrower a 30-year product. Essentially, the rates land at about 3.875 to about 4.5%. So a little over conventional, but the difference is again, we're not looking at the borrower, we're looking at the asset. So a lot of our borrowers, they may not qualify for a conventional loan with Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, but they're going to qualify with us because our emphasis is on the asset. We're looking to make sure that the borrower's rental income is at least 1.25 DSCR. What that means is outside of our mortgage payments, we want to make sure that they're also collecting an additional 25% into their own pocket to make sure that they're profitable enough to pay our mortgage.
Very similar to commercial. Very, very
exactly.
similar.
Exactly.
So you're working, it's very interesting. It's you're working on a residential with the commercial method. Literally. it's very cool. I like that. It's very, very cool. Especially today with so many people are investing in single family homes and people are moving in and trying to do those movements into suburbia, and you guys are helping them out. That's very, very cool. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the business aspect of things. You guys obviously started 2018 and all of a sudden the business grew. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, how it's to grow a business, you know, because a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm a one-man show, two-man show, all of a sudden I need to hire more people. Where are you today and what was the big move up and what was the debate?
I want to say what contributed to our growth really is the ability to provide service, right? Our customer base, they're different in the sense that they're investors. They expect things done yesterday, not today or not tomorrow. So essentially when they call you at 10 o'clock at night, they expect you to answer. When they send you an email at 6 o'clock in the morning, although they spoke to you at 1 o'clock in the morning the night before, the day, that same day, they expect you to answer. Again, they have a lot of money on the line. So I think for us, one of the contributing factors is the service that we're able to provide. You know, for us, whenever we bring anyone on board, there's an entire training process. We have policies and procedures of how to take a loan from A to Z, but outside of taking a loan from A to Z, how to make sure that you give the service to the borrower, to the investor, that they expect. That's key to us. In addition to that, making sure not only that we share that vision, but our employees, but in addition to that, we also are very big on social media. Today, many of our competitors, you know, they don't really understand the value in social media. And I say this wholeheartedly, right? It brings in a number of loans and deals for us today. So we emphasize on that. I mean, you can't, I can count on maybe on one hand how many private lenders are on TikTok. Guess what? We're on TikTok. We have, I think, a little under 7,000 followers on TikTok today. Who would have known? I mean, my
that's
nephew,
amazing.
You know, it is. Incredible. My nephew is on TikTok. My nephew is on TikTok, and you know, he's 13 years old, and he's the one who says, you know, we should go on TikTok. And one of our other partners mentioned the same, and I was like, you know what? Give it a shot. Let's see what happens. And here we are. We have a flow of business come in from it. So, you know, it's just the innovative type of marketing, whether it's social media or outside of social media, but also service. I think those are the two contributing factors that helped us grow today.
Tell me something. Talking about marketing. When you go and you want to market it to your clients, do you go directly, you know, to your clients who are the investors, or you go to brokers who get those investors, or both, and how?
It's both. So, you know, look, there's a number of ways of doing it. And I think for us, we want to deal with borrowers directly, but we also understand the fact that by dealing with a broker, a borrower, an active borrower, can bring you 2-3 deals a year, right? Whereas an active broker can bring you 2-3 deals a month. So, you know, we value the relationships with borrowers because without them, we would be nowhere. But we also want to emphasize on dealing with brokers because they can bring you a volume of business. And I think the best way to do that is being able to be candid with them. When they bring you a loan, you tell them what you can do and whether you can do it and how long it'll take for you to do it. And a lot of times, even if you can't fit into the expectation that they had, your candor, your honesty to them means a lot more because their reputation and their name is on the line. So it's very important with brokers to be candid and transparent.
Incredible. I love this story so much. It's such a unique angle of doing residential that is so refreshing. Tell me how people, when they come to you and they tell you, listen, I have the opportunity to go to you or to go to, you know, the traditional type of bank that will give me the same stuff for the same thing, for the same product, et cetera. And you tell them, no, you should work with me. What is the main pitch here? And I'm not asking it as a how you sell it, but I'm asking it as a, let's say I'm the customer. I really want to understand why I should work with you, even if my credit is high and I can go to those lenders. What are the options of going after you? What can you give me beyond what they give me? We all know that their rates are much lower, but what can you give me beyond the high rates that make me think maybe I should go with this guy?
No, it's a good question. I mean, look, I always tell my borrowers, if you are able to get a conventional loan on this deal, you should. I would if I was them, right? I would. But a lot of times the borrowers cannot. And even if they could, they still choose to go with us. So for all the reasons why we've mentioned why they cannot get a conventional loan, for example, the roof is missing. They need to close within, you know, 3 days. Their income is not up to par. Their bank statements, you know, are kind of inconsistent. So for all those other reasons, but outside of that, it's making sure that they get the construction financing that they need. So, you know, outside of the financing that we give them for the acquisition, we're also financing their construction. So for an experienced borrower, we can go up to 90% of their purchase and 100% of their construction cost. Conventional lenders, they won't do that. They'll give you the acquisition, but they won't give you the cost of the construction, the financing for the construction.
Tell me something. Are you guys also thinking ahead and looking at the multifamily market that is also booming like crazy and saying,
it is.
We could be there too. You want to be there too. You don't want to be there. What are your thoughts?
So it is an emphasis for us. You know, recently we just brought on Andrew Schnitzel, who was a commercial broker in the city for many years. He and I actually went to law school together. That's where we've met. And we brought him on for the purpose of helping us expand into the commercial space. He brings a wealth of knowledge and experience in that space. So for us, the emphasis moving forward is to continue growing our residential arm, but also start, you know, kind of bleeding in and entering into the commercial side, specifically in the multifamily end.
Yeah, multifamily is also growing crazy. It's interesting more than ever because after what happened, you know, in the cities, everybody started moving to suburbia and all that stuff. We all know about this. The interesting part is now people are starting to move back into the city, and that's an interesting take. It will take time. We see that, especially in New York City, that is all based around the office aspect, which will take even more time. But in general, cities are coming back. That's what's happening. Cities are coming back. How would that affect your market of hard money lending for those investors who might actually say, if at a certain point, I maybe want to go there?
Truthfully, I don't think it's going to affect it. If anything, I think it's going to actually help us in the sense that, you know, today, majority of our business was in the New York City area, right? The five boroughs, Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx, Staten Island, Manhattan. And I think once COVID hit, a lot of our borrowers, they didn't know what to do because their network and finding deals, their wholesalers, their brokers were focused in those areas and things weren't moving, right? So as a result, they had to pivot into new directions and figure out how to actually start finding deals elsewhere in suburbia, in New Jersey, and what have you. I think that once things open back up here in New York, for example, in New York City specifically, people are going to start seeing a lot more deals happening. People are going to start wanting to work, you know, in the office. And as a result, they want to be able to maybe move back into the city. So I think eventually it's going to help our business in the sense that it's going to help us grow in loan volume.
Interesting. Let me ask you this. When you're looking at your business and you're looking at everything that goes around you, okay, you're serving all those guys that are investors, that actually are investors who want to buy single family homes, 1 to 4, as we said, and they are in the tri-state area, but a lot of people are running away from New York. They're running away from New York. They're going to Florida. They're going to Nashville. They're going to Idaho. They're going to, depends on what communities they are. I know from the Jewish community, because I'm in it, and you also know that, that people go to Florida, right? We know that. But
the question is, how long can they stay there? I think that's really the question, especially once the hurricane season comes in. I think people are going to quickly realize that, you know, while
interesting perspective, perspective, because a lot of people are moving there, like they want to go there. In terms of your business, and you said that you guys are looking into expanding elsewhere, and you already started that process.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about expanding and where to expand? Where are the markets? Where's the pack? Where the pack is, when Gretzky said, where's the pack going?
I would say for us personally, it's the Northeastern corridor, right? It's the Sun Belt. For us, that's been our focus. So that includes, you know, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, of course,
great markets.
Georgia, and so on. I think that really for us is good because not only is the residential market hot there, but also the multifamily side.
Yes.
So with our emphasis being on continuing to grow our residential arm, but also start entering into the multifamily side, we feel like the best markets for us are going to be the Eastern Corridor, really the Sun Belt of those areas.
Beautiful. What can I tell you? Listen, this is very interesting. Very, very interesting. And before we say our goodbyes to everybody, can you please tell everyone how they can find you? Where can they find you? Obviously, you guys can see the links above and below. But Ruben, tell us the website, the TikToks, the fun stuff, where they can actually follow you, find you, learn about you. And that was great. I mean, people can learn so much about what we spoke about today. Being a residential, being a residential with a commercial method, and helping investors within the residential aspect. Think business, residential with this business mind, with the mind, how do you say, mindset of business mindset within the residential. I love that. It's great. And the lending,
good title.
The world of lending. Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. So tell us, how can we find you?
So first and foremost, they can give us a call, 212-777-7780. They can also visit us on the web at welendllc.com. And they could also visit us on all our social media platforms, including TikTok at welendllc.
You guys can see the links above below. And that's how to contact them. Contact you, obviously, through LinkedIn also, meaning the
Absolutely.
Link is right here. And you could see it, whether you're in a podcast, in an audio setting, you guys can go to the text and see all those links and see how to reach Ruben and WeLend, and how they can help you achieve your dreams in terms of investing, flipping homes. And not only that, you know, what I got from this interview is not only meeting you, Ruben, you are a wonderful guy, and what future holds, we'll see. And it's awesome. But I think that the other thing that people could take from this interview is what you could teach them. A lot of people are doing lending, and they, meaning are lenders. That's what they do. They're lenders, and they know how to raise capital. They know how to get you the lending. They know how to originate the loan, get it fast, get it. That's all beautiful. But very few of them are hardcore in the business that they do.
Yeah.
And you actually do it. If you guys are listening and you are thinking about, you know, 1 to 4, meaning one single family, up to a four family, which are not the commercial side. And you need someone who thinks investing, who thinks commercial, who thinks how to do it. I think this is the best way, because you have someone who knows how to do it because he did it. He actually did it, and he can teach you how you can achieve your dreams and do that. And the next step would be for you to grow to multifamily. But, you know, you have to grow, meaning for those listeners who want to grow to multifamily, you need someone to teach you the basics. And obviously he's also going to multifamily now. He's already there. So that's what an awesome business you have. And it was a really pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Ishai. It's a pleasure being here.
And thank you guys. I'll see you in the next show. Take care. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.